Welcome to the Blackhawks Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. With Blackhawks insider Charlie Romeliotis, I am Pat Boyle. On this edition, we break down the split over the weekend, the Blackhawks beating St. Louis and getting shut out by San Jose. What is wrong with the power play? Charlie has some numbers that are staggering, like the Blackhawks won for their last 30 on the man advantage. What tweaks can be made to that? Is Lucas Reichel on his way up from Rockford? Could he be the savior? Or is it better for him to stay in the AHL and be called upon when he is ready and the team is not in desperation mode? We discuss Reichel's latest injury that occurred Sunday in the AHL. And are the Hawks leaning towards more of a 50-50 split with Lankinen and Fleury? It's all coming up next on the Blackhawks Talk podcast.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
All right, Charlie, let's recap the weekend that was. Started with Black Friday, the come-from-behind victory over St. Louis, the 3-2 win in overtime. And then it finished up on Sunday night with a 2-0 shutout loss to the San Jose Sharks. What were your takeaways from the weekend's festivities?
Yeah, well, I thought St. Louis, they obviously grinded out a win, right? And then you move on to the San Jose game, and Derek King even said afterwards he thought that was the best game that they played all year long, at least under his tenure from start to finish. And it was hard to disagree with that because they had a season high in shot attempts with 76. They had a season high in scoring chances with 38. And it's weird to say they didn't even score a goal. So it's hard to say that was one of the best games we played all year long and yeah. We didn't even score. Right. And so I'm sure I know the fan base, some of the responses were like, well, you got to score to win. Right. And so I understand that point. But if you replay that game 10 times, I think the Blackhawks win that game, 8 or 9 of them. Right. So I think it's hard to be mad about that. It was really the second period that kind of San Jose outshot them. I think it was 15-9 or 8, and they led in scoring chances. But the first and third period, I mean, it was a dominant effort by the Blackhawks. So I think it's hard to be upset with that effort. And then they grind out that overtime win against St. Louis. And so that St. Louis is a really good team this year. So that's a noteworthy victory, even if it wasn't pretty.
Yeah, that was their most noteworthy victory of the season, and especially the way they came from behind to do it. I thought it was really telling in that first period after you give up the first goal in 59 seconds. And, you know, Jonathan Toews, the constant talk about him getting his first goal, he seemingly gets it 4.5 minutes in. You've got the crowd into it. The game is tied. And, oh, hold on a second here. We've got another offside review. And indeed, Patrick was offside, so the goal is wiped away. And I flash back to 3 weeks to the day. That was the game in Winnipeg when the Blackhawks, it was Jeremy Colliton's, turned out to be his last game as head coach, fell behind to the Jets 2-0, scored a goal to make it 2-1, and that goal was wiped off by video review for a offside call. And you know, you had Derek King watching the game in Rockford, and he said, I saw a team, as he's watching it on TV, that's fragile, that couldn't rebound from that. And so 3 weeks later, they not only rebounded from that, but they went on to win the game against a good team. So I thought that was a really a telling result and the way they went about it. And then you look at Sunday night, I mean, look, if I said to you they're going to hold San Jose to four shots in the first and three in the third, I think you're like, okay, yeah, I like our chances here. But it's the issue that, you know, has really been around this team all season, and that has been the lack of five-on-five scoring. And now you've got it coupled with a power play that has been anemic.
Right. They were able to rely on that power play at the beginning of the season to, you know, that was their way because they weren't getting the goaltending and they weren't getting the five-on-five scoring. So what was keeping them in games, even though they only had one win through their first 12 games, what was keeping them in games was that power play. And now that has cooled off significantly. It's really been a complete 180, not just a, oh, it's just a little drop off. Like, they were among the top five in the league in the first month of the season, and now they are dead last in the month of November. So that's something that the reason why that's noteworthy too is because now you're not getting the power play scoring, and it's continuing to filter into the five-on-five game. Like, when you're not generating offense with the man advantage, now it's really hard to get confidence to score at even strength, and we're seeing that right now.
Yeah, and you've got some numbers that really talk about the drop-off that we've seen here over the last 12 or 13 games. And again, we knew it wasn't going to, you know, click at a near 30% clip like it was early on in the season. And again, they weren't winning those games. So yeah, it was keeping you in, what, 4-2 games or what? It seems like they were getting a lot more power play opportunities too early on in the season. It seems like, especially since Derek King took over, you know, most nights it's 2, maybe 3 power plays max that this team is getting. And then when you're in a funk and those things are spread out over, you know, 60 minutes, it's not like you get a lot of opportunity to kind of right the ship, so to speak.
Right. No question. So I reached out to the SportLogic folks I wanted to dig deeper into why the power play was struggling, because the first month of the season, so October 13th through November 1st, the Blackhawks were 10 for 38 on the power play, and that was the sixth ranked percentage at the time, right? And they were number one in scoring chances. They were number one in expected goals for. So all the underlying metrics were there as well. From November 3rd and on through November 29th, which is when we're recording this, the Blackhawks have one power play goal in their last 30 opportunities, 3.3%. That's dead last in the league. So this is the biggest discrepancy between those two. Now, it's interesting because the offensive zone possession time, it's the exact same. And the Blackhawks actually have a better zone entry success in the month of November than they had in October. So this is where the biggest discrepancy is. In the first stretch where the Blackhawks power play was really hot, they were ranked 4th in shots on goal, 8th in slot shots, and 3rd in inner slot shots. In the month of November, they're 26th in shots on goal, 13th in slot shots, and 25th in inner slot shots. So the shots on goal have greatly diminished in the month of November. And because of that, the higher quality of shots has also diminished. So, and then I also want to point this out. We get on Jonathan Toews for not scoring a goal, but we talked about how important he was on the power play. In that first month of November, the offensive zone faceoff win rate was 61.4%. In the month of November, the offensive zone success rate is 47.6%. So the faceoff numbers have dropped significantly. So if you want to get on Jonathan Toews for not scoring, that's fine. But when we talked about how important he is to the power play earlier in the season, that's what we're talking about. The fact that the Blackhawks are starting in their own end is a significant factor, and couple that, all those reasons are why the Blackhawks haven't been successful on the power play lately.
And Patrick Kane was talking about it after the loss to San Jose. He said, look, if you had me predict where this power play would have ended up this season, he said top five. He felt just the way they were clicking in the preseason, the way they started the season, 10 of 38, the sixth ranked power play. And then he pointed out the loss of Tyler Johnson, which I don't think a lot of people think about as to maybe the catalyst to this issue, but the timeline kind of matches up to when, you know, he left the lineup. He was in that bumper role. He is a right-handed shot. There's not a lot of right-handed shots on this team. And, you know, they've tried different players in that role, like Kirby Dach, Brandon Hagel is in it at the latest. Again, not a right-handed shot. And since everything goes through Patrick Kane, usually on the right side, it allows that bumper to have the one-timer set up if he is a right-handed shot. They don't have that right now. And I don't know when Tyler Johnson's going to be back. But they need to – I don't know if I'm going to put all of the blame on that, but that's probably a portion of the reason why there's been this drop-off.
Yeah, no question. And you think back to last year, the Blackhawks got off to a top five start on the power play last season. What happened when it dropped off? There was no Andrew Shaw in that bumper role, and he was the right-handed shot. I know he played a significant role in the puck recoveries, but that's also – the bumper role is so key. And when you go from third in inner slot shots to 25th in inner slot shots on the power play, well, who's in that inner slot? It's the bumper role, right? And yeah. I know Tyler Johnson was not the – you know, it's not like Tyler Johnson was firing off a bunch of shots, but because he was so good in that bumper role, he was able to move things. The seam passes opened up and they were able to shoot from the point, and they were like, he was so good in that bumper role. So yeah, I wonder how much that really did play a factor because they haven't been the same since.
Yeah. I know. I'm trying to think of some options that they have.
I know they tried Kirby Dach in that role. Was it last year? And they had, was it Dylan Strome in the net front role? So I know Kirby's played that, but he doesn't come across as more of a puck recovery guy for me. Like he comes across as like a net front because he's so big. So that's where guys like Tyler Johnson and Andrew Shaw, like those gritty players, they are the ones that play a significant role in that bumper role. And I know Brandon Hagel is in that spot too, but he hasn't played in that spot a lot, and he's a left-handed shot as well. So you wonder how much that's playing a role, but yeah, it's hard for me to think that a technical tweak is the problem. I think they got to get Tyler Johnson back and maybe just figure out how they're going to move forward in that
way. I mean, look, I don't want this whole unit's success hinging on the health of Tyler Johnson. I think you bring up a great point. Like you can try to locate the right shot you want in the slot, but the other part of the job description is retrieving pucks. And that might actually be the bigger part of the equation when you look at the success of a power play unit. And like, I don't look at Kirby as that guy. I do look at Hagel as that guy.
They tried Carpenter in that role too. And
right,
you know,
he's Carpenter, you know, the other one, I'm just like, again, I'm trying to think out of the box is if you put maybe Seth Jones, in the bumper role, that then you have your righty shot, but to me, he's not a puck retrieval guy necessarily. And then you have Gustafson take Seth's spot, as the quarterback on the point. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here, but when you have a lack of right-handed shots and just knowing Seth's propensity offensively, I don't know if you would consider his shot to be quick enough to get off in this slot, but you know, maybe it's something that we'll see them try.
Yeah, and I've seen, I can't remember which teams have done it, but I've seen defensemen in that spot, so it's not common, but it's also not unusual. I do think Seth Jones is so good on the point, and I know we've talked about this on previous podcasts about he's just so good manning that point and keeping pucks in, and his shot is a threat too to open up lane. Like
right.
When Kane is giving it to Seth Jones, like there's a threat that he's going to shoot. Whereas when Gustafson has it, he can shoot, but he's primarily looking for the pass first, and so it could be an option. I don't know if we'll see it, but it's honestly, I mean, what else? Nothing else is working, right?
Right. I mean, look, you had the numbers, one for their last 30 dead last since November 3rd.
But I did find it interesting though that their zone entry success rate went up. Like it's 68.9% in the month of November. It was 61.3% in the month of October. Like when we were watching the Edmonton game, and you know, it's like, oh, teams are scouting how they,
yeah.
And so maybe we, that was a narrative that we, in those specific games, I think we were accurate, but maybe it's not a problem in the grand scheme of things. So maybe we want to eliminate that narrative as if like they're not having success in that department.
You mentioned Taves earlier, how they're trying to manage his workload. And it's difficult when you know, when you put him with Kane and Hagel and you're like, okay, so, I mean, because at times when Taves has been playing almost like a third line center as far as minutes go, but when you pair him with Kane, you're asking for top minutes. And then we talk about him playing in all situations, power play, penalty kill. Looks like they're not keeping him out there too long on the penalty kill, maybe not rotating a second time for his group when it comes to a penalty kill. But your thoughts on how the Hawks are on a day-to-day trying to manage the captain's workload?
Yeah, I like what they're doing. Because at the beginning of the season, there was talk about, you know, should the Blackhawks consider benching Jonathan Toews on the second of a back-to-back or whatever. To me, I would not go on that route. I would do what they did with Marian Hossa when he was dealing with his skin condition. Give him practices off. Give him morning skates off. Just be right mentally and physically for the games. And I think that's where you might see the payoff. Like, I remember Joel Quindle told Marian Hossa, he's like, Marian, come to me whenever you need a day off. If you need a day off all the time on practices, I don't care. I just need you for the games. And I think if the Blackhawks tell that to Jonathan Toews, and I'm sure they've had that communication throughout, but, you know, let me know when you want a day off. And although Derek King did say, it's interesting, he's like, Jonathan Toews is not going to come to me for a day off. Like, sometimes you gotta hold him back because he's always going to want to be on the, but if it really helps his game and if it helps him stay mentally and physically fresh for games to stay off the ice, because they gave him the maintenance day on Saturday, which wasn't unusual, but then they had an optional skate on Sunday morning and he did not take he took the optional. So he was off the ice. Like, the last time he was on the ice was Friday night's game. So he was off the ice for 48 hours. So that to me was a little bit like, okay, he wants to go into the game mentally and physically fresh. So I think that's how we're going to see them manage his workload.
I think we're going to see Kane and Kat back together, I would guess, on this upcoming road trip. I mean, I totally applaud the idea of trying to shake things up 5-on-5 scoring-wise and putting Hagel, Taves, and Kane together. Didn't disagree with it. But, you know, when you see the chemistry between DeBrincat and Kane in the few times that they get, whether it was overtime in St. Louis, in the St. Louis game, or on the power play, it makes me think that, you know, you can't run away from that combo 5-on-5. Do you think we'll see DeBrincat and Kane back together again?
Well, I don't know if we're going to see it on the first game, just because everything, like, every single line was clicking on Sunday against San Jose, except the fourth line. And that fourth line was the only one that was clicking in the night prior against St. Louis, which is funny. So I think they might roll back the same lines and maybe you have a quick hook. Like, if it's not working after the first period against Washington, then you explore putting Kane and DeBrincat together. But you have to make it clear to the players going into the, I guess maybe you don't necessarily want to do that, but I think you want to make it clear, like, hey, we're going to roll this back. And if things don't work, we're prepared to put, you know, Kane and DeBrincat back together. So we'll see. I think they will roll back the same lines while Washington, because they all three of those top three lines were clicking except the fourth.
I saw Dylan Strome in the press box again last night. So he's been a healthy scratch the last two games, correct?
Yep.
And, you know, I look at it, the way this team is the makeup of this team, and basically Derek and Kyle Davidson alluded to this, you know, is they don't have a ton of skill. So they're going to have to win these games, grind them out 2-1, 1-0, 3-2, kind of like they've done here over the last nine games. And when you play that style, chip it in the zone, forecheck, work it low to high, try to get somebody in front for the redirect. It maybe doesn't lend itself to Dylan's skill set. You know, Dylan is more of a playmaker. He's a more skilled forward. And, you know, when you look at the line construction, you know, they tend to put, you know, like, I think they put a big value in the Hardmans and the Caras and the Carpenters and these players that they look at that can, you know, kind of play this boring, less skilled style of play. Is that kind of also working against Dylan Strome getting back in this lineup?
Yeah, I think that's why we see a lot of the grinders in the lineup, because the Blackhawks, it's so easy to say the Blackhawks are struggling at 5-on-5 or to get offensive scoring, and then they take a guy like Dylan Strome out of the lineup and, you know, everyone's like, what the heck? They can't score a goal. But when he's in the lineup, you know, that it's not. I think the problem with Dylan is that he needs like top power play time. He needs to be put in situations that build his confidence. And so when you're only giving that even strength time, and I know he was on the second power play unit when he was in the lineup, but that second power play unit is getting the last 30 seconds of the power play, right? Like they're not out there to generate momentum. And, you know, they're just like, all right, first power play didn't get it done. Second power play's out there. Then you got to get the second D-man out when the guy comes out of the box. So it's not enough time. And so we saw it his first year in Chicago. He was so good, almost a point per game player. It was because he was getting first power play time. He was picking up points on the power play, and then that was filtering into this 5-on-5 game. So when he's not playing a top six role and when he's not playing on the first power play unit, it's hard for him to really make an impact. And when he was on that fourth line during the Thanksgiving Thursday practice, like I immediately thought, all right, well, he's already on the outside looking in, because this is not playing with guys like Reese Johnson and Ryan Carpenter is not putting him in a position to succeed. And so it's just hard to find a spot in the lineup for him right now. And that's why they are trending towards, all right, like let's play Jujhar Kerr on the third line, because he's been really good over that. Like he can work for pucks and we'll have to grind out wins. And that's why I think the Blackhawks are trending in that direction, because they're kind of realizing what their identity is.
Yeah, and it's a tough spot because, you know, I think they would like to find a different home for Dylan and get something in return. I just think what they want to get in return, and talking to league sources, what the going market looks like for Dylan is way off. You know, if the Hawks want, in their world, like a second round pick or a conditional third or something like that, the offers that they're getting are not that. They're getting more like fourth or fifth round picks, unless the Hawks take on some of his salary, and I don't think they want to do that. So it's like, how do you build up somebody's stock when he's in the press box in a suit, you know, one out of every three or two out of every three games, and then he gets, you know, one game to kind of kickstart himself? It's just it's kind of the vicious circle that they're in right now, and I don't really see how this is gonna to play out.
Yeah, it's hard because he's losing value sitting in the press box, but when he's playing on the third line, and he did get that opportunity to play with Jonathan Toews, and they were the only line that was clicking against Vancouver, and then they were probably the worst line against Calgary. But then Dylan Strome comes out of Calgary, and it makes it seem like he was the reason for, you know, the success. Like if Jonathan Toews scores a goal against Calgary, that line's staying together the next game, right? So it's tough. Like, so I understand where the Blackhawks are coming from, where, you know, maybe they would like to find him a new, maybe Dylan wants a new home as well, because I think he does,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, this can't
I'm
be
sure
fun
he
for
does.
Him.
He doesn't want to be sitting and you know, I definitely think he could have helped that power play last night.
Yeah, no question. And so maybe that's where you explore, like, we talk about Jonathan Toews' workload. Do you put Dylan Strome on that first power play and move Jonathan Toews to the second? I think you might have actually brought that up in a recent show, correct? Or was it this podcast?
Yeah, they tend to blend together, but I think
I know Edzo actually mentioned it on one of the shows when he was on.
Yeah, I don't disagree with it. You know, back to the so-called load management with Toews. You know, I wish the NHL would look. No fan wants to pay their hard-earned money and not see a star play in a game. I get it, but you know, like if there's a slate of three games in 5 days, and you could tell me I'm going to get the best Jonathan Toews for two of those three games, And my sacrifice is I have to give him one of the three off to get the best out of him in those other two games. You know, I'd sign up for that. Johnny wouldn't do it. There's a stigma attached to it in this league, and they'll probably be the last that you'll see that will ever consider load management. But I think everybody has, every team and player, it's an individual case. And if you could say to me, look, his energy level is over, a 4-day span playing three games is this, but I could get it bumped up appreciably if he sat one of those three games, I would strongly consider that.
Yeah, I get it. Given how demanding hockey is, the problem is it's easier to do if you're a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, or if you're the Blackhawks of 2013, where you're like, oh, Hossa, you need a day off? No problem. Yeah. We don't care if we finish 1 or 8. We just need to get in the playoffs, and then everyone's fresh, right? But when you're on the bubble and the Blackhawks are fighting and clawing for, like, the parity in hockey is so crazy in today's day and age that, like, it's so hard to say, hey, sit this one out. I know we're 5 points out of a playoff spot. So it's easier to do if you're like a team like Tampa Bay, where it's like, Kucherov's, sit this one out. We could probably win without you anyway. Take a rest, right? But it's hard when you're on the bubble team. But I get it, because over the long term, I'm sure that would keep guys fresh.
Well, look, and the goalie situation is totally different, but it's not the way they're handling Fleury and Lankinen as of late. Like, you could say the way Fleury has played that he deserves to get every single start, but because these games lately, they've been kind of spread out, and there's been days between games that, they've taken Fleury out after a goalie win or a really strong performance, and they've put Lankinen in there, and Lankinen has performed well. So it's like, like we saw the decision they made. What didn't Lankinen go in Edmonton, and yep. Fleury went in Seattle? Is that the
yeah? It was Fleury Seattle. Lankinen Edmonton, and then Fleury Van. Yeah,
right.
And then we saw it, and then coming off the road trip, we thought, all right, Fleury will get St. Louis, big divisional game, and Lankinen will get San Jose, and it was the opposite. They're like, we got to get Lankinen back, and Fleury gets San Jose. Yeah. So it's kind of funny how they're managing that workload too.
Yeah, and it seems more about trying to keep the guys active and Lankinen engaged over a span where you don't want them not playing for 7 days.
Right. I don't think the Blackhawks are trending in a 50-50 split. I do think it's just because there's been such a significant gap between games, and that they want to make sure Lankinen isn't going more than a week without seeing action, because then that's not keep putting him in a position to stay fresh and be a dependable backup. So I hope that's being communicated to them, because I'm sure Fleury is like, what do you mean I'm not starting against Saylor? What do you mean? I'm coming off a goalie win. So I'm sure this is a little bit new to him. Well, actually, it's probably not new to him, because he came from Vegas with Robin Leonard, but there was like a set rotation in Vegas where they, no matter what, it was Leonard, Fleury, Leonard, they alternated every game, no matter if it was a coming off a shutout, coming off a bad performance, that was the rotation. So I think that's got to be communicated to the goalies, and I'm sure it is.
Have you seen an uptick defensively and better job as far as I think we've seen them make a minor tweak in their D zone coverage, placing a little more of an emphasis sorting from the slot out. Have you seen that on the ice?
Yeah, and I think it's translating too. I don't feel like they're giving up a ton of high quality scoring chances. Like, it's not perfect by any means. Like, I'm sure they have stretches like the San Jose game. I think they gave up like 5 high danger chances in the second period, but in the first and third, they gave up like 2 combined. So there are stretches where, they have some lapses, but it's not like, it's not consistent where you're looking at the box score at the end of the night and say they gave up 15 high danger chances and it was every period. Right. So I do think we're seeing progress in that department.
If folks are looking to Rockford and Lucas Reichel to be called up to help out this team offensively, you got a scare on Sunday while the Blackhawks were playing the Sharks. Rockford was in action and Reichel was involved in a again, it's AHL video, so it's not like you got 10 different views of it, but it was a dangerous hit along the boards. What did you see from the Reichel hit and having to be helped off the ice?
Yeah, I didn't like that hit. And I think what made it scary is the reaction or coming to the back to the bench. He was hunched over and he looked a little bit disoriented. And so I think, you know, Rockford, we're recording this on Monday afternoon. Rockford is off today. So we're going to get an official update on Tuesday, presumably. And so that's tough to see because he's been progressing down there. He's one of their top scorers and he's playing heavy minutes. But I will say this, I know a lot of people are, you know, the Blackhawks are struggling to score 5-on-5. I am, even if he's healthy, I am team keep Reichel in Rockford, no matter what. Like, they continue, unless the Blackhawks really turn things around and things are clicking, do not call him up to try to be a savior. They tried to do that with Adam Boqvist a couple years ago. The Blackhawks weren't generating any offense from the back end. They were struggling defensively, but they said, we got to get Boqvist up here a year early. And he was trying to keep his head above water all year long. So I caution fans to kind of look to Lucas Reichel, if he's healthy, to be that answer, because you want to bring him up here to elevate the team, not be the answer to everyone's problems, right? Because that's not it's not going to be the case. So hopefully Lucas Reichel does get healthy. When he does get healthy, I say keep him in Rockford for as long as you can. And when he is literally knocking on the door and he's blowing the competition out of the water, that's when you say he is too good, we need to call him up right now.
I like that philosophy. Yeah, I mean, it's already difficult enough to make your debut in the National Hockey League, and especially being a first rounder, the expectations. If you're being called up to be the answer to their 5-on-5 problems and their power play issues, I mean, geez, like, could you paint more of a desperate situation for a franchise? It seems like it would be unfair to the kids. So I guess from that standpoint, I'm with you. You know, I'd rather him come up and be the supplement to a good offense and a clicking power play, and not be the key ingredient or the missing link.
Yeah, and he very well could play at the NHL level right now, but you want him to immediately come up and say, hey, you're playing with Patrick Kane, or hey, you're playing with Jonathan Taves, you're getting 18 minutes a night, go have fun offensively. And you want the Blackhawks to be you want them to have three lines rolling and the offense is clicking. You don't want to bring him up when everything is bad, because then you're looking at this poor kid like, save us. And it's like, that's such an unfair situation to put anyone in, let alone a teenager.
All right, you're going to be traveling on this upcoming road trip. It's Washington, the New York Rangers, and then we think the New York Islanders on Sunday, correct?
Yep, yeah, and it was a little COVID scare by the Islanders. They've had a ton of guys on that protocol list, and they canceled or postponed two of the games from this past week, and so I don't think that's going to affect the Blackhawks schedule, but we'll see how things get shifted around here.
Anything you're looking forward to on this road trip? Any sights you plan to take in? Have you lined up any dinners? being in the big city on a weekend in New York City? Have you lined anything up, Charlie? People want to know.
So I actually have family members in Connecticut, and they're making the drive from Connecticut to come see me because I haven't seen them in a couple years with COVID. So that'll be nice to see some little cousins and hang out with them. And then, Pat, I am very much looking forward to my WebEx hits from a hotel room and trying to figure out a spot where I'm going to do it from the press box at Madison Square Garden and Washington and the Islanders. So, hey, stay tuned for that. We'll see what spot I pick.
Yes. And we've got some around the corner on a pre-post game intermission coming to your NBC Sports Chicago television. I'll just say this. This is my little teaser. It's something Eli Peyton Manning-esque. Okay. That's my little nugget that I'm dropping, and it's going to be coming up soon. And we may even, you know, carry it over to the podcast as well. So That's coming up in the coming days here in December. That's going to do it for this edition of the Blackhawks Talk podcast. For Charlie Romeliotis, I'm Pat Boyle. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to rate us, and we'll catch you next time on the Blackhawks Talk podcast. Did you know that 80% of the grass-fed beef sold in the United States is imported from overseas? It's staggering. That's why I get my meat from GoodRanchers.com. When you buy Good Ranchers, not only are you getting amazing meat, but you're also supporting American farms. GoodRanchers.com safely delivers American craft beef, better than organic chicken, and more, delivered quickly and safely to your door. Don't play the grocery store guessing game. Know where your meat comes from with GoodRanchers.com. Go to GoodRanchers.com and use the code Chicago for $20 off and free express shipping.